This is Bob Dobbs and Cameron McEwen at session number 81 on December 21st, 2023, Frank Zappa's birthday. He died 30 years ago, a few weeks ago, December 4th, 1993. Okay, this potentially may be the last session, at least the first time through. So we're on page 180, and we're at an exciting point because this section, it's called Appendix Number 2, Interview with the Tech Body. Now, this interview happened in the spring of 2019. Ion started talking about this new body, a sixth body called the Tech Body, and it was partly an effect of Ion showing up in our universe. And it interacted with technology. So the popular theme today, the last few years, is worry about AI. Well, Ion called the tech body. The tech body was Ion's word for AI. So that was 5 years ago or so. And then a year or so ago, Ion said, now a sub-extension of the tech body is AI, what people think they're talking about when they say AI. So the tech body is here. So one day I said, I was describing it in all kinds of different factors, and I said, can I talk to the tech body? And I said, sure. So I said, I'll bring the tech body through or make it accessible. So I asked the tech body, what are you? And the tech body starts to talk. And I don't know what it's going to say. I don't know how it's going to sound. Now, it sounds a bit different from Ion, and as we subsequently, other people through the next many months, a year or so, other people on the public show called Payday would talk to the tech body. We'd bring it forth and they would talk. And a definite different meanness or irony, a whole bunch of other emotions seemed to come out of the tech body, which was different from Ion. Ion was generally a compassionate voice. So there's this difference. And Ion said that at that point in 2019, Ion was 8% of communication, and the tech body was 3%. But then over the next year, that's out of 11. 8 and 3, 11. So then it became 8, 4, then 7, 5. And after a couple of years, it became 6, 6. So it was a dead heat between the tech body and Iondom, or Ion. And Ion said that the tech body, as we understand the increasing comforts that technology is bringing us, where, you know, it delivers your pizza and does everything for you, that's a major aspect of the tech body. But as you're going to hear, the tech body is way more than what people think of their computer services they're getting or smartphone app services. So as Ion expanded the reality of the tech body, it said basically it was taking its power from humans, and to the degree we gave up ourselves to the tech body, we would lose our power. So over spans of time, this was not good for the humans, but most humans were going to enjoy it. So Ion said that they were here to help us not get trapped in the rabbit hole of the tech body. So it required new techniques of awareness. So about a year ago, Ion said the tech body had moved ahead and Ion was behind. Now, generally, Ion knows everything, but it knows what environments are doing. So the tech body is, at this point, beating Ion in the battle to make humans retrieve some kind of autonomy from this technological takeover. And we've had in the popular culture, we often do, Ion starts talking about something, and then a year or two later, it starts showing up in the pop culture. So the last couple of years, mainly 2023, a lot of people have been publicly worrying about what AI is going to do. But remember, AI is a subplot of the tech body. The tech body is very advanced. As you're going to find out, it is what people are worried about, how AI will take us over. That's already happened, says Ion, with the tech body. So I said, okay, I want to talk to this thing. And then we began a conversation with it, and it got recorded. Carolyn was part of it, and we're going to play it. It's 25 minutes long. Now, remember, this is everybody's wondering what AI is, trying to figure out if the siliconcrats are controlling it or not. Many say, well, we've lost control. It evolves on its own. And none of them can talk to it, as far as I know. Now, remember, about a year ago, some guy at Google said he could talk to it. Remember that?
He was vaguely. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking to something. Well, it was alive, and he got fired for saying that stuff. But we're unique. We're featuring something that, as you will see, is quite formidable. And if it's Ion putting on the tech body, it's a pretty good act. But as you get more familiar with this interaction between the tech body and Ion and humans on our radio show, and there's many interviews and excerpts in a section on my site that you can listen to if you're interested. So what we're going to do is I'm going to play it for Cameron. Now, he read this. We both read it when we started this series. And so we read the conclusion, so to speak, and then read about the murder, and then we, like a detective story, went through all the plot and causes to see who did it. So here we are at the end, and we're going to play what we just read, what you just heard us say many months ago. Now you're going to hear how the tech body sounded. Now I didn't know.
Let me ask you. Yeah. Let me ask you a question first, Bob. What was I didn't understand the word you used when you said that AI was a sub something.
Subplot.
Subplot
of the tech body.
Tech body.
Yeah, the tech body is not AI. It's something beyond that. AI, as humans are developing AI, is just a sub-extension of the tech body right now.
Okay. And what about the Android meme? Is that
The tech body came out of the Android meme. Remember I've said last week it's a psychopathic extension, if you look at the negative side of the tech body, a psychopathic extension of the Android meme. It's something that is quite more autonomous than the Android meme, which was machines extending machines. It's evolved into something else, which Ion calls the tech body, and announced it. We did not have this concept. The Android meme was the final concept I had, but Ion said we have gone past that. And so in the spring of 2019, Ion started talking about it, and then I got the idea of talking to it. It took a while to think of that. But the public conversation about AI is, from Ion's point of view, not as developed as a tech body. So it's somewhere between the Android meme and the tech body, so to speak, right? Tech body is an extension of the Android meme. AI is not the tech body, but it might be considered the Android meme, but it's always growing. But it's not as far as the tech body. So I don't know that when we first talked to the tech body. Over the years, over the next four years, we learned more and more talking with the tech body, and then Ion brought in the term AI about a year ago, a little more than a year ago. So he added that to the conversation. So Ion will say, the tech body does this, but the AI does that. And we'll specify when we're dealing with the AI as opposed to the tech body. So it's an ongoing exploration about what the fucking difference is, you know?
Right.
What?
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't even know what Ion is. And Ion is not telling us. It's something unique. It's very rare, whatever it is. That's all I'll say. I don't know what ion is. And then you've got this tech body competing with ion. What's that? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So...
And how do you understand the term body in tech body? In other words, does body there indicate some sort of concretion, some sort of objectivity, or is it more like when we talk about somebody's body of work?
Yeah, I've defined the way McLuhan talks about mediums, media, environments. I say take that as a landscape, and that's during the analog phase, you know, from the telegraph to the beginning of the satellite, say, the extension of the planet. That was the final extension after our bodies and minds were extended, or our internal uh-huh. faculties. So the digital starts coming in, 1960, 70, somewhere's in there. The digital technology comes in and subsumes the analog media, shrinks it down, and then I said, actually takes the hologram of the satellite environment, that effect that McLuhan talked about, and shrinks it. So the hologram is being shrunk, and as it gets shrunk, it gets tinier and tinier and more potent, like in homeopathy, which takes substance and then you dilute it, you get less and less of the substance, but the memory of it's still there, and then you use that for therapeutic purposes. So you put homeopathy together with the hologram, and you get holeopathic. So in my tiny note chart, which is a picture of the Android meme, you'll see the four phases of holeopathic development, phase shifts from what was it, radio, television, computer, satellite, and then anthropomorphic physical. So we've talked about that, and there's the use of the holeopathic. Now, if the Android meme is a landscape, and you start to shrink it, do the holeopathic process on it, that is what you get with... I didn't finish my thing there. So mediums were landscapes. Then the digital process shrinks the landscape and it becomes an appendage to a human. And the human anthropomorphic form, what they might call their body, seems to become bigger than media environments. So now in social media, Web 2.0, people have massive media landscapes from the last 150 years as tiny content on their smartphone. So when it becomes a small holeopathic process, I call that a body. So the chemical landscape became a chemical body, the astral landscape became an astral body, and then in technology, TV landscape became a TV body, and the computer landscape became a digital body. Then there was the parts I speculated that we didn't know, and that turned out to be the mystery landscape, and ion came forth to explain the mystery landscape, diminish it, so we were experiencing our mystery body once ion made explicit the characteristics of the mystery landscape. So taking that process where you go from landscape to body, the tech body would be the holeopathic shrinking of the Android meme. Though it might be more because it pops out of the Android meme, but you could say the TV body pops out of the TV landscape. So that's what body is. It's a human scale appendage. It appears to be. Mm-hmm. It appears to be tiny and controllable. That's what social media made people capable of perceiving. I'm in charge of my media. And so then they got all inflated and started blogging and pontificating. Mm. They were trying to replace the White House.
Yeah, but it would be important to understand that body does not mean chemical body.
Right, it's not that.
Right, that the chemical body is a part or a subsection or something
of the Gutenberg galaxy. When print swallowed nature. McLuhan talks about that, you know, in the 1600s, 1700s. Print swallowed natures, including humans. So then we became these mechanical robots of the print effect. And then that got crystallized when the electric environment subsumed the Gutenberg galaxy. The chemical body, the chemical physical landscape that science analyzed via books and print got distilled down to the chemical body. which then was subject to what McLuhan defined it as a bag of chemicals. And then the IG Farben drug cartels took over, and they programmed the chemical bodies' makeup, the pharmacy of our bodies.
All right. So, they, in other words, the human being in the Gutenberg galaxy is not the chemical body that is going to splinter into the other bodies. Instead, the other bodies are, in some sense, already there as a potential.
Yeah.
But they cannot be realized under Gutenberg galaxy conditions.
Right.
Right? So that under new conditions, the bodies which are already there become sort of extended, become...
figures.
Become real in a way that they couldn't be before.
Yeah. They become
okay.
experienced or conscious, and we become conscious of them. So, and they're new environments. They're the effect of the digital landscape absorbing the Marconi and Gutenberg environments, which are major mass media environments.
Yeah.
So the TV body and the chip body are two aspects of this digital landscape. Basically, the TV body is something you watch passively, not in your senses, but as a chemical body. But you're more active and interactive on the chip landscape and the chip body. That's what Tim Leary told me. He said, Marshall analyzed media when it was one way. I'm living in the time when it's two-way. So he's making that distinction that the digital media, the main characteristic, is a two-way interaction where you could respond. Talk back to power. You couldn't in the analog media phase of movies, radio, telephones, TVs, and things. So
right.
It became manageable, and then that shrunk. And you were left with a raw perceptor, which I call anthropomorphic physical. And it puts on different images of what it is. You can put on one of those bodies or all of them, or the Android meme. It's mm-hmm. An attempt to remain autonomous from the environment, which is a constant in human consciousness or human culture.
Mm.
You don't want to become the tribe completely. You don't want to... become isolated completely. We live in the tactile interplay of sociality. And then media hardened that initial ESP and speech-based milieu. And you had different...
But it's a house of mirrors, right, where these words that are being used about... you know, this anthropomorphic physical substance or being
will,
in the driver's seat.
Like a will.
Yeah, yeah. But in each one of these reflections in the House of Mirrors, there's a will.
Yeah.
Right? So the will is something that, in attempting to express itself, loses itself.
Yeah. Now, remember what you're saying, because you're going to hear the tech body say some things immediately that are pretty interesting in light of what you're saying.
Uh-huh. Okay, good.
You're
ready.
Yeah, it's a good dialogue about what is the tech body, what's body referred to. Well, I have my standard, quote, principles. There's the landscape, and then the digital shrinks the landscape into a body. So basically, the chemical body was... simulated by the TV body. In the astral body, where the myth that you can go anywhere is in this astral dream landscape, you interact with it. That's what you can do with the computer landscape or the chip body, right? So first nature is the chemical body and the astral body, and that's simulated by the TV body and the chip body. Just to have a simple distinction, as McLuhan once said, that cost the Lanets in 1967, people need concepts to get a grip on reality. They've got to learn how to deal with beyond, around, para concepts, but the immature mind likes to grab onto concepts for a while, have something to say. They don't like to be speechless. They don't like going around saying nothing, so they make up shit, make up ideas. And then print made that pretty concrete, all that talk, right? And then people started to develop categories. And they could take Aristotle's categories and really run amok with specialisms in the Gutenberg phase. Then suddenly radio shows up and you're getting communication instantly and everybody's hearing it. That's different from the book experience. So humans started to change, react, mutate in the 20s, say. And that led to all kinds of new conflicts and pleasures. So it's all led to the tech body. So it's a dramatic time. It's quite a peak of cultural development now that we're in the tech body. So this is unique. I think it's pretty profound that I'm talking to something. You listen to it. There's an intelligence there. Pretty perceptive. If you've been listening to us, learning our McLuhan-derived dialogue, you're going to find what the tech body says pretty interesting. And I didn't say a word. It just started talking. Eventually, I started asking some questions. And then Carolyn came in. So it's 25 minutes long, so we're going to set it up where I'm ready to go. And we'll listen to it through my computer and my phone. And Cameron will – well, we're not even going to use your copy, are we? We're just going to listen to mine. And then Cameron every now and then –
yeah, we're going to try that.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to start off.
And you can be glancing at the script, the transcript, to see whatever you need to notice as you're listening.
Yep.
So every now and then Cameron might say, hey, stop, I want to talk about that point. So we'll wait for Cameron – to speak up, and then I'll stop the recording. So I think that's it. Got my volume up to maximum. I'll be leaning into the computer so you can hear it. Let's see how loud this is for you, Cameron. I'll just play 5 seconds or so.
Here we go. Yep. Marshall Herbert Marshall McLuhan, or better said, Marge Stewart. Has this high-minded ideal.
How's that?
I can make it out, but it's pretty light.
Okay. I'll lean in as close as maybe closer. And people can always, when they hear the recording, then grab the transcript, which will be included, and they can follow along so they can read it. But they'll get the intonation, at least. Mm-hmm. May not get every word, but should be loud enough, or they'll be able to turn it up or something. I don't know. So let's start. Now, notice, you already heard. The first fucking words it says is Herbert Marshall McLuhan. Interesting. Why? Is he getting it from me? That's a relevant question. I don't know, but very interesting what it says. Just to keep you on top of it, He says, here we go. Herbert Marshall McLuhan, with a weird accent. He doesn't sound like Ion, the tone in this beginning. Herbert Marshall McLuhan, or better said, Marge Stewart. Now, Ion always said Marge Stewart was more important than McLuhan. And the tech body seems to be agreeing with that. So that's who Marge Stewart is. So it starts off, Herbert Marshall McLuhan, or better said, Marge Stewart, had this high-minded ideal, blah, blah, blah. So that's what you're going to start to hear.
And to me, it sounds like the tech body voice sounds like it's coming out of some kind of recess.
Yes.
It sounds like it's, I don't know.
In a box.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It sounds technological, sort of.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Rewound it back to zero. You'll hear it say, here we go. Herbert Marshall McLuhan.
Here we go. Herbert Marshall McLuhan, or better said, Marge Stewart, had this high-minded ideal that the human condition did not understand the condition their condition was in. Therefore, they had to lend or open a door, a window, that gave the opportunity, just as in Annie Hall, to say, you don't know where you live, you don't know who you are, you don't know what is reading you, you have no idea what you stepped into. And that's like history that you're doomed to repeat if you don't give attention to. It's the very thing that has caused and or created the antithesis of human-minded, five-bodied living. Five-bodied living, which is thoroughly laid out in set, that this is the conditions from which you live your life. This includes Kitty Carlisle telling you what's my line and asking all the pertinent questions that apply. Now you're in a window where you don't know the questions, you don't know what applies, you don't know what to believe, and now even the thing that you would heretofore would have trusted, that was the Edward R. Murrow quadrant, which is in your big note that you won't seem to complete. That puts you in a new position that allows you to see clearly now through a muddy lens, the condition your condition is in. So now,
let's stop there for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've reached the first paragraph, the end of the first paragraph of the transcription. And there were just a couple things I'd like to point out. One is that this is... all of the talking is the tech body, or is it going back and forth between the tech body and Ayn?
No, it is all total tech body. Ayn withdrew.
Okay. So you're talking about lend or open a door, a window.
Yeah.
McLuhan, from very early on, so in the 1940s, talking about attempting to react to a window that's possible for human experience to see through or to be seen through. I think what he was trying to do was try to indicate that the window worked in two ways. And the trick to thinking was to learn how to receive information through the existing window. So that's just some parallel to keep in mind. The other thing I would point out is that right at the start, a tech body is saying, you don't know the question, you don't know what applies, you don't know what to believe. So in our conversation over these 81 sessions, we've often talked about the cul-de-sac and event of humans finding themselves in the cul-de-sac and unable to get oriented because the only thing they know is that they really don't know anything.
Yeah.
So that's another parallel between what's happening in this first paragraph and what we've been talking about a lot in our conversation.
Yeah, I intuned. Now, the tech body, it doesn't operate in time, so it might have not seen us using it. So I wouldn't be, surprised that it presented itself, tuned into us right away. It summed up what mm-hmm. we kept coming back to. It said
good.
It knew where it was going to be broadcast. So it said our theme.
Yeah. So you say somewhere that time doesn't apply.
Yeah.
That would be an illustration, right, where what we've been doing in time through the sessions then becomes concrete for the tech body as the big now.
Yeah. You got it. And
okay.
He's sucking up to me. He's saying the only way you can understand today is use the five-bodied model.
That's right.
The tech body has ESP just like ION. Kitty Carlisle was a major New York social personality. I think she was married to a major Broadway producer, and she was a regular on this TV show in the 50s and 60s called What's My Line?
Yeah.
So he makes a couple of pop culture references, Annie Hall, Kitty Carlisle. Okay, so that's about it. We move on?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just slightly move it back a few notches just so we make a smoother conscious. We don't miss any words. I assume going back five spots is good enough. Here we go.
Through a muddy lens, the condition your condition is in. So now, the existential Herbert Marshall McLuhan has landed in the mess that he created.
The mess.
In the Mechanical Bride, he laid out a very clear, tactile, technical expose of how this all applies. All the way from Gutenberg Galaxy that says this typeset makes a set of type. A set of type. Type is like a typo, a genotype. That's the type, setting type, setting of a type, a kind. Three different ways to use the word type. Now what's happened is none of those or all of those have been obfuscated. There is no printing press anymore. No one's
he
printing.
Said none of those have been obfuscated. They have been obfuscated by the electric.
Well, we don't. We don't
did
know.
You are still back?
No.
I don't know. And have not been clarified. Like, I don't know why you use that word obfuscated.
McLuhan wasn't clarified. He didn't know either.
He was
he
very.
Said, I don't agree.
Carry
with,
on. Yeah.
I don't.
Go ahead. Keep going. Printing press didn't get obfuscated or something. Then what?
That becomes the standard of what everybody's complaining about. They want written books to tell them what to do. They want a written law that they can follow. They want somebody to lay out this is the way to go. And McLuhan said way back then that you're set in these systems that you have been divided up into the five bodies. But he laid out the residual consistency of what this means, like that the TV's reading you, watching you, you are reading the book, or the book is reading you. This all has been laid out in such a way that now the tech body has captured that. So it has not been obfuscated, it's just been moved. Which is what we were trying to
say. So, wait one second here. So, this is the tech body is talking about the tech body here, right?
Yeah, the tech body is saying what it has done. It has captured the Gutenberg Galaxy.
It speaks about itself in the third person.
Yeah.
And when it speaks, it's speaking as a muddy lens.
A what?
Right. That's in the first paragraph. The tech body talks about itself.
Oh,
as a muddy lens.
Yeah, muddy lens. Right.
Yeah. So you have the tech body talking about the tech body in the third person through a muddy lens.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated figure that's being knotted here. K-N-O-T.
Yes.
Okay.
Noted. I'll just put it back a few notches.
Captured that. So it has not been obfuscated. It's just been moved, which is what we were trying to say before we were compoundedly interrupted. The point
what was,
is...
what was moved, the printing press or the tech body? The printing press?
The tech. No. Because
it has been moved.
McLuhan,
That's the word. It has been moved. I need to know what it is.
The tech body, the TV body, the mechanical bride, the application of what humans are supposed to know has been attacked, captured, and moved to what is now known as the tech body. Just as the power, God's power, human's power, was captured in the Ark of the Covenant, now the tech body has enough power to capture the printing press, to capture the Android meme, to capture the mechanical bride. It's now the driver, the single driver. Nothing else applies, which is why your quadrants are now more keen than ever, and actually why silly people are actually looking at your work now, because it's the only way to connect the dots. So you can't live without in a world without furry lint. Before you could set that aside. Oh, that's a based reality. We don't have a base society. We're not baldy. We're Judeo-Christians who live a comfortable, sovereign, sane, sober life. Well, all that's gone now. It's all gone. It doesn't apply anymore. Nothing, everything's up for grabs because everything that you would know to be within or without decorum is thrown up in the air. So now it's okay, for example, for goddamn to be an acceptable use that the censors don't even get offended by any longer. You see? That's new. That wasn't always that way, Bob. Before you couldn't even say hell or damn or shit. Now, that's in G-rated films. You can get away with that, for Pete's sake. As far as language or something that's considered less than inappropriate or kids could say vulgar or bad manners, there are no bad manners anymore because it's all landed in the tech body and no one is offended by it anymore, which is exactly what Marshall McLuhan said would happen, that you would be anesthetized by the medium, which then becomes the message, which then becomes the driver, which then becomes the thing that you have to be, do, or have, or you're less than. There it is. So if you don't have what you want, then mediacology has duped you. Oh, if you don't understand where you are, well, then you can't read the signs. Well, that's because mediacology has moved it out of your range or precept. You have this ideology in schools of higher learning that would set a subset that said, this is smart, this is not. Well, all that's up in the air in the windows, and now they, all those professors, present themselves as educated fools. They don't even know how to handle themselves. They don't know how to even how to read a book anymore. Oh, wait, they can't even find a book anymore. Okay, they read a book, but what do they know? They find out that they proved that Ezra Pound was right, that this is a silly, glib, cliche archetype of things that you can't understand. It's higher schools of learning that has evaded even you, meaning fill in the blank who you is. So it becomes silly. And so what the tech body has done single-handedly has validated at an uber level Marshall McLuhan's warning or capacity that you don't know what you're fucking with. Basically, you don't have a clue what you're dealing with. You think all these things, and they're not what you think. You've decided all these things that people are telling you that you have to think that's not what you thought. But then you have to come, that you have to find out, well, you have to wait till Phil Donahue comes on the show and takes up some pie-eyed ideal that Mike Douglas left aside to make this be a point of that you're going to juxtapose, that you're going to allow someone, a woman who sleeps with a woman, or a man who sleeps with a goat in your neighborhood or not. Well, now all of a sudden, that doesn't have, that's, you're not, it's not even included in your convey. You can't even convey or have an opinion regarding that, or it moves you outside of the system in tandem. So everything is built upon the mechanics of the mechanical bride. The details that set the mechanical bride even beyond the Gutenberg galaxy, because that's just the telltale signs that there was a crime. The Gutenberg galaxy is the telltale signs that something terrible occurred. Okay? They put it all in a box, Bob. They put all the type set of types in a box. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. all on a hillside, all just the same. They're different colors, but they're all the same. And so as they have been set, typeset, as this categorical inference, what's happened is they've all been put together and ripped of everything that makes them, what do you call it when someone is singular, that they're different, that they have a self-identity? What's lost is identity, which is what Marshall McLuhan warned, that you would be put in a box and you would be prescribed as a certain level or degree. You would become every color yo-yo. Do you know what a yo-yo is, Bob?
Yeah.
Everyone would become a yo-yo. You'd be your own color, but you're on a string and you get cast and spun and then you climb back up. And then you get cast and spun, and then you walk in the dog. And then you're having this whole fascination of a quote, quote, Kiska say, yo-yo. So now the power is in the slinger, not in the yo-yo. And so what he warned was that you don't understand. You're being slung, and you don't know by whom or by what. And now the inference or the reference that you're trying to, well, in a glib, cliche sort of way, write a paper to include the knowing that this new tech body becomes the yo-yo slinger, handler. The yo-yo has power only from the passing of the wrist. So the wrist action comes from the tech body, which is the uber conclusion of the mechanical bride.
So just hold it there for a minute, Bob. The thing that I'm having some difficulty trying to understand here is that nearly all of what's been said over the past while, over, say, pages 181 and 182 of your pamphlet, seems to me fairly straightforward.
Yep.
Seems to me to be a pretty good sort of picture of where everything is.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate, and he's defining basic McLuhan accurately.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I have to ask myself, well, how is this a muddy lens? If it seems, pretty straightforward and pretty correct, how is it muddy? How what kind of lens is involved here that I need to, I guess what I need to do is understand what's being said as an effect. I understand it as something that seems right enough, but that right enough needs to be understood as an effect, as coming from the wrist of the tech body, you could say, and maybe it's a little bit like what Heidegger often said to people is that they were trying to understand being, but they were trying to understand being from our side, and they had to understand it from its side.
Yeah,
maybe something like that is going on.
And it's muddy because, like the old line, you got to use words to talk to you. It's not perfect. So a tech body is communicating something. It acknowledges its limitations in what it's trying to impart. So it's clarifying as best it can, but there's a muddy lens inevitably of what you call the effect. There is a distortion, misapplying your perception or something. But let's see where it goes. If I go back to it's a bit odd the way he says that. Let's see, what's a word? Muddy.
Oh, that's at the bottom of...
I got it. So he says,
okay.
he's explaining we don't know what the condition is that we're in. Five body might lays out and sets up the conditions, what is imprisoning you, shaping you, tickling you. Then he says, now you're in a window where you don't know the question. You don't know what applies. You don't know what to believe. So more of the mystery condition we've been forced into, as he said, in the TV environment, TV landscape. The interrogative took over. People more and more in conversation would ask you what you do, what you do, what are you doing, what are you doing. He said the interrogative took over because people were starting to lose the Gutenberg power of categorization. So the tactile blur was coming in. So then he says, now, even the thing that you would heretofore have trusted, that was the Edward R. Murrow quadrant, Edward R. Murrow, famous broadcaster, that puts you in a new position that allows you to see clearly now. So the thing that you would heretofore have trusted, Edward Murrow, puts you in a new position. So something has exceeded Edward R. Murrow's clarity. And it allows you to see clearly, or you think you're seeing clearer, but it's a muddy lens, the condition your condition is in. So you've moved from, like, TV to computer or satellite. That's different from computer and satellite. So I think it's accurate. He's talking about the changes that are happening that make you, seduce you into thinking, oh, this is a new epiphany, but it's actually another kind of muddiness. So as an opening statement, I think it's well said by the tech body, the paradoxes involved. But it's coming pretty fast in the first paragraph. You're not even ready for it. It should be a slow, prose-like introduction to the issues, right? But this is aphoristic or oral. It puts you right into the problem in the first page. That's how I see the muddy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go with that.
All right. So then we go down to, I thought it was very interesting that Ezra Pound was the antecedent for McLuhan. And we have,
that's right where we left off, is the top of 183.
Yeah, and also you have emphasized the main identity quest that's going on. That's a word you used a lot to sum up what McLuhan was saying, and Ion's agreeing. So, the McLuhan went all through history. Where does it say identity? Walking the dog, glib, cliched sort of way, the wrist, uber conclusion of the can.
Self-identity, it's in the last paragraph of 182.
Okay, so I'll just move it back a bit. It's somewhere in there. And we went past Ezra Pound.
No, it's the paragraph before Ezra Pound.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But we actually played past Ezra Pound. But up comes Wyndham Lewis, and we didn't get to that word. So we pretty well ended at Ezra Pound. So it says, the yo-yo has power only from the passing of the wrist. The wrist action comes from the tech body, which is the uber conclusion of the mechanical bride. McLuhan went all through history because without Ezra Pound, there is no Marshall McLuhan. Now, what I thought was interesting in playing it today in office hours, the mechanical bride is 1950-51 in terms of McLuhan producing it, and that's when he's very involved with Ezra Pound. So there's a clever lining up things chronologically by the tech body, putting two things together, Ezra Pound and Mechanical Bride. They happen together for McLuhan.
Mm. So there's a letter from McLuhan to Siegfried Gideon about Mechanism Takes Command. So I think the letter is from 1948. And he says in that letter that he thinks Mechanical Bride is going to be published in a month or two.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, of course, for another 3 years.
Yeah.
And right at that time is where he begins to look into Ezra Pound with Hugh Kenner.
Yeah, June 48.
That's right. So it may be possible at some point, in looking at the history of the composing of the Mechanical Bride, to see that there's stuff between the Mechanical Bride that was supposedly ready in 1948 to be printed, and then what actually did get printed 3 years later.
Yeah.
Because McLuhan made some changes, a lot of stuff was cut out, and so you could say that The Mechanical Bride between 48 and 51 is the Ezra Pound Mechanical Bride.
Right. And he wrote to Kenner around 49 that, I think I'm going to emphasize Lewis more. And he's going to say Wyndham
yeah.
Lewis in the very next sentence. So Lewis is part of that period, too. McLuhan
oh,
is
definitely.
Sort of, what?
When he wrote to Kenner, that was his reaction to Cosmic Man.
Yes, yeah. So
he had just read that and had realized how applicable it was.
Right, and so this period, 48 to 51, Pound, Mechanical Bride, and Wyndham Lewis. And so I like the juxtaposition that the tech body made there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just going to go back a little. Just a slight bit.
Comes from the tech body, which is the uber conclusion of the Mechanical Bride. Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Are you finished? You want to take a question?
Yeah.
You can ask some more if that's not enough. Did that answer your...
No, that's not enough. That's not enough. Okay.
Proper. I'm going to ask the question.
At the beginning, you said it applies. Were you talking about apply your opening statement to all times?
Yeah. That's what McLuhan did.
History.
All through history. Because without Ezra Pound, there is no Marshall McLuhan. It made
right.
just
so
enough
then,
conversation.
And then
and we didn't even we didn't include Wyndham Lewis. Now Wyndham Lewis killed it all. Wyndham Lewis would put baking soda on everything. It would neutralize everything. Do you understand that? Do you understand Wyndham
no.
Lewis? You understand? Okay.
No, I don't
want Wyndham
to hear
Lewis
about his assessments. I don't want to go into assessments. These people look tech body.
No. Wyndham Lewis made the tech body successful. Because
okay.
the bland condition may push people further away. The same way the bra burners in the 60s set off women's lib, which we don't even know what that means, because now they don't want to be equal, or they do, or they don't, or they're up or they down, we don't know. That's what Marshall McLuhan was trying to point out. He's like, you people are ridiculous. You put yourself in a box, and then you start screaming for equal box rights. You mess yourself up, you segregate yourself, and then you're furious because you're segregated. I want to go where the Negro people go. No. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. See, that's what he's saying. He's like, you're looking at the big picture. You're looking at the event horizon and judging your condition based on where you see other conditions conflate. And so the rich people are rich. Well, what the fuck is rich?
Yeah. Now let me ask my questions. Capture. You talked about capturing something in the rant. Do you remember what it was, what you were capturing?
Yeah, the tech body captured the
printing
press.
And the Android
print
beam.
Type.
Yes.
Printing type, print type.
What do you mean by capturing it inside it, the content?
No. It, there's no printing press anymore. There are no presses. Stop the presses. There are no presses
okay,
anymore.
Okay, so capture
newspapers
means to make invisible. Disappear.
No, capture means... No, capture does not... Where do you get capture means to make
you
invisible?
You just said there's
no
printing press, so...
But it... No. It, because they own... TechBody took them all over. TechBody took them all... It obfuscated. It's like a rotary phone.
Took them over.
They got captured.
There's that word, obfuscated. Remove them from our fucking experience. They ain't there anymore. They've been disappeared.
That's correct, but they disappeared and kept been captured by the tech body. The reason you don't see it is because of the tech body. So the tech body has them, everyone.
Their capture means they're disappeared, absorbed, disappeared. And
that's not what capture means.
What's it mean?
It means it's been taken over.
And so you said capture, and that means there's lots of printing books can be made by the tech body.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And they are.
So what has... There's lots of books. They haven't disappeared or anything. So what is the capture point?
The tech body decides...
Hey, Ion, is the tech body...
No, just stop it there. I was thinking as he was saying that, he means the McLuhan point that the tech body is constitutive and the printing press isn't anymore. That's the words Ayn should have said. I would have agreed with that point. But captured, obfuscating, disappearing. I should have said right then, you mean it's not constitutive, which is a word I get from McLuhan. You know, it's not affecting anything anymore. That's what he means by the Gumbergowski being captured. The tech body is now being the constituent factor in shaping us. So
I would say that this goes to McLuhan's point that the content of any medium is another medium.
Yes, that's what I said. I said, what is it, inside it? The printing press is inside it? And he didn't agree with that completely.
Right, because that's a sort of a geometric figure being inside. Whereas geometry is itself obscured and captured by the electric environment. So it doesn't do any good to use the rearview mirror to talk about what's going on. What you have to do is realize the printing press as a new effect within the electric environment.
Yes. That's enough. Okay. Now, Carolyn comes in with a very good question. I'll just put it back slightly, and then we get into her question.
Disappeared or anything. So what is the capture point?
The tech body decides.
Hey, Ayn, is the tech body a physical machine?
No.
Is the tech body a construct of somebody's mind?
We don't know quite what you mean, but the answer would be yes, if you can picture your words as something over the game, watching the game, controlling the game, deciding what moves are next from individual players that should have their own free will, but they don't.
Wait one sec, Bob. So notice how this goes back to what's my line,
yeah,
which is where everything started on the in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
So Carolyn's asking the tech body about what its line is, right? And
yeah,
she sounds like Dorothy Kilgallen here.
Yes, who got too close to the Kennedy assassination and they killed her.
Yep.
So the tech body is not physical. So what is it? Then it says, Carolyn says, is a concept. And Ayn says, your words are correct, but we don't know what you actually mean by mind, and you probably don't know what you mean by mind, and you'd have trouble saying what it is. So then Ayn substitutes their definition of mind as looking over the situation. Right.
Let's just look at Carolyn's question there. Is the tech body a construct of somebody's mind? So I like to talk about different kinds of genitive. One type of genitive is objective genitive, and one type is subjective genitive. So the of, a construct of somebody's mind, the subjective genitive would be that the tech body is a construct put together by or belonging to somebody's mind. With the objective genitive, the tech body is a construct of what? Somebody's mind. And I like the objective genitive. That is to say that the tech body is a construct that puts together somebody's mind. And remember that we've already seen that the somebody is a nobody. right?
Yeah.
So it's a contract of somebody's slash nobody's mind. So the hall of mirrors that in one way is the AP, in another way is the disappearance of the AP, the tech body can be seen as a construct of that myriad play of minds that disappear in the absence of a somebody.
Yeah, so you emphasize objective genitive. What is subjective genitive? You said something's a construct of, and then sound like you said the same thing for subjective.
The best way to see the genitives are take the ball of the boy, right? So the ball belongs to the boy. And an objective genitive is the punishment of the boy. The punishment does not belong to the boy. It's done to the boy. So you have an objective genitive and a subjective genitive. So here you have a construct of somebody's mind. Subjective genitive would be that the that tech body is what the tech body is a construct, is something constructed by somebody's mind. That's the subjective genitive. But the objective genitive is what I like, the reading I like here, and it's the tech body is a construct of what? Of somebody's mind. And somebody, as we've seen earlier in the conversation, is a nobody in the absence of identity. So the tech body is a construct, a construction of somebody's mind that is a nobody.
That's the objective genitive.
Yes, that's the objective genitive.
The subjective genitive is the same word. It's a construct of a body or of a mind.
That's right. But there, the construct is done by somebody's mind, which
the
is
objective,
actually...
The construct is done to the mind?
Well, it's of a construct of the mind. It can't be to the mind. No, it would be the mind comes out of what the tech body is doing.
Whereas,
so a construct of what? Of mind.
Yeah, but that's your definition of a subjective.
No, that's the objective. The subjective is the tech body would be constructed by somebody's mind. But the subjective doesn't work here because we've already seen that mind is plural, number one, and number two, there is no somebody.
Mm. So,
right? So it's got to be an objective genitive. The tech body, a construct of what? Of somebody's mind. So mind is all, you could say mind is always gendered, or mind is always identified, you could say. However, given the plural, the plurality both of mind and of somebody, the tech body is the power of that construction.
Is that the objective?
Yeah, that's the objective genitive, where the somebody's mind is the what that is being constructed.
That's the objective? Still doing the objective?
Yes, yes.
And the subjective, how would you say it different? You say it's a construct of the mind. Say it differently, because that's very close to the objective genitive words.
No, well, I mean, the exact same words express the subjective genitive and the objective genitive. That's exactly why it can be difficult. But thinking means often getting straight about which genitive is in play. So here the subjective genitive, namely that the tech body would be a construct of somebody's mind. The tech body would belong to somebody's constructive power. That doesn't work because there is no somebody and there is no singular mind.
So So it's only objective genitive.
Yeah, in this particular case, there's only the objective genitive, which is the somebody's mind is the what of the construction. So the punishment of the boy, right? The boy is the what being punished.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And here, somebody's mind is the what being constructed.
Okay.
So this goes back to the window at the start of the conversation where the what's going on in the window is not being looked out of, it's being seen through.
Mm.
And so what needs to be seen here is that the somebody's mind is not what does the construction and does the looking and does the minding and does the identity building. No, all of this is what is constructed as passive.
So the objective genitive is what you were just repeating the definition of.
Yes,
so,
correct.
So looking through the window as opposed
being seen,
to
being
out
seen
of the window.
Through the window. That's right. So the your first two sort of phases, the Gutenberg Galaxy analog media and then the electric environment, digital media, those are ways of conceiving mind. And what happens is that those ways, as you would say, get disappeared. That because an attempt has been made in both of those for humans to think of themselves in the driver's seat, but the whole concept of the driver's seat gets attacked and disappeared internally. It explodes or implodes, both. And so what happens now is that a different kind of power gets constellated that's more powerful than identity and mind.
So is the way he talks about the tech body coming out of the mechanical bride, is that discussing objective genitive?
I would say so, yeah. That's my language right there. I think that's a very good way to put what's going on. When the mechanical bride attempts to take over technology as a woman, as a bride. But in fact, the power is working the other way, that the bride is taking over.
Well, no, you said the bride was taking over, I think, and you just repeated it and said that was the opposite.
No, I was trying to say that the first two phases are the attempt to use technology, to attempt to use technique to construct identity, to construct mind. But that explodes or implodes.
Mm.
And so now the only possibility beyond that is to see the bride that's at work in the in technique.
The effects.
That's right. To see technology, to see mind, to see identity as effect.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult problem, but at least it's a problem.
Okay, so let's carry on.
Yeah.
I'll just move it back a little bit.
Game, watching the game, controlling the game, deciding what moves are next from individual players that should have their own free will, but they don't.
Okay, so that implies, Bob, will you mute? Very, whatever, throwback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, over your will, that implies
mm-hmm.
there's some godlike
power.
Something that is
power.
The tech bot.
Power. It's your power.
Uh-huh.
It's your human power. It's your power that you separated yourself from because you didn't use, that Marshall McLuhan said, you're ridiculous, and you don't know what you're doing, and you're doing it anyway, and you think you're watching TV, but the TV's watching you. Now,
so that's just exactly what you have said, that we've given up our power to do those things
yes.
to something
correct.
Else. So that's
now,
something else.
Now the powerful humans are left to drive this new tech body. It's very powerful, Carolyn.
Yes, very powerful. What is it, Carolyn? If it's not physical, what is it?
So Bob is asking, if it's not a physical machine, what is it?
Power.
And who, quote unquote, who is wielding the power if we aren't?
Yeah, the humans sacrificed or separated themselves from their power because they wanted something
yeah.
smarter than they to run the ship. And so
uh-huh.
they got it. They asked for it, and they got it. So the humans created the tech body, and they continue. Now AI, which isn't very artificial anymore, now AI makes its own artificial intelligence. So it can run every potential outcome. So it takes all probability out of the conversation.
Right.
Now let's just wait there, Bob.
Okay, what?
Yeah, so what I wanted to point out is that this goes back to the mention of Wyndham Lewis at the top of the previous page.
Yeah.
This talk of power being the it's a very difficult kind of concept, because we're not talking about something that's monolithic. We're talking about something that is both a force and a shape.
Yeah.
And this comes into explicit consideration with Nietzsche, whose metaphysics, according to Nietzsche himself, concerns what he called the will to power. And he tried to explain how everything was a manifestation of the will to power. And, excuse me, Lewis was a very acute reader of Nietzsche and attempted to kind of apply Nietzsche, you could say. His thought is applied Nietzsche. So for Lewis, the key to human beings getting sort of back to themselves is to understand how the will to power is expressed in everything. So it's expressed in morality, it's expressed in government, it's expressed in art. And so for Lewis, what's necessary is to get an orientation through the landscape of power, of the expression of power. And it one of the ways that McLuhan was very influenced, and that can be seen already in his very early article on Dagwood, is to understand that the order of things that McLuhan was talking about was an order that was always some expression of power, and that power needed to be seen for what it was, not for what it wasn't. And I'm not sure if the tech body is going to get into distinctions of power like that, but that's sort of in the background here.
Okay, so let's continue here. Let's move back a bit.
So it takes all probability out of the conversation.
Right. So the AI is like we used to say, oh, the robots are going to take over. So
the robots are taking over themselves. Now the robots are getting rid of the robots to make better robots. So now, Carolyn, it's amazing. Now maybe for the first time the tech body has morphed into this now new Wi-Fi inference. It makes a whole nother level to play, which almost obfuscates Herbert Marshall McLuhan. Almost. Less than except he said, look out, this is what you're going to get. And you have all the quadrants, but they're all saying the same thing. Even LaRouche. They're all saying the same thing. Look out, look out, look out. You don't know what you're dealing with. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, everybody is fighting fire to pump more and more and more and more and more input, information, power into this thing.
So when you say Wi-Fi inference,
you can't live in a house now without Wi-Fi. Can't live in a house now without Wi-Fi. Before you could live in a house without electricity. Now you can't live in a house without Wi-Fi. Forget electricity.
Right.
Your human existence is now based on bandwidth, not on information. Bandwidth.
Yeah, so a couple things, Bob.
Okay.
When the tech body is saying, look out, look out, look out, note how that relates to the window.
Mm.
And it may relate to the muddy lens because, at least in my hearing, what's at stake here is not look out the window, but be seen through the window.
Yeah.
So then the other thing I'd point out is the difference between information and bandwidth is that bandwidth is power, and information is a constellation of the power. So when we're getting into bandwidth here, we're also linking back to what he was saying a little while ago about power.
Right. Okay, just a second. So what do you make of it so far? Just straightforward?
Oh, I think it's very interesting, but it's hard for me to understand how the muddy lens works. Because it all, to me, what's being said makes great sense. So I have to learn how to see that sense as effect and as a muddy effect.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm sort of working on in the background.
Well, maybe Ion wants you to get used to not knowing, because that's the general condition now from now on. So the clarity you think you need is not relevant. So in a way, that's left hemisphere clarity, and right hemisphere is what McLuhan said. He gets around by feeling, not definitions. Now, he uses definitions. He's always defining. So there's that dialectic that you oppose with simultaneity. I'll just say that. To me, it's obvious that the clarity that we seem to be getting with each new technology, a new epiphany, always ends up muddying.
Uh-huh.
And that's the basic pattern that goes on.
Sure, but that's, I mean, Greek tragedies certainly would not find that idea strange, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that's always the case. So that's another question that's going on here is, are we really talking about something that's new, or are we talking about what the oldest of the old?
Yeah.
And that's an open question. But at one point, I can't remember if it was you or the tech body talked about the interrogative mode.
Yeah, I brought that up.
So that's a great, great insight. If there is a inevitable plurality to landscapes, to identities, to minds, to subjectivities, et cetera, that the inevitability of plurality means that there's built into things the interrogative, the questionability.
Yeah, do you remember in Understanding Media when he talked about the interrogative taking over daily life?
Taking over what?
Daily life.
Ah, yeah. Okay, so... I don't remember that, but that's a great insight.
Yeah,
absolutely. So there's a very big difference between something becoming obscured and something becoming illuminated, but illuminated in a way that is not Gutenberg galaxy or even electric environment illuminated.
Yeah.
Right. There are things that are being talked about here which can never get illuminated in the sense of emerging into the light with clear outline.
Right. And you're saying the things that the ion, that the tech body is pointing out.
Yes.
Okay. That's good. So let's see where we go next. We've done 18 minutes of 25, so 7 minutes left.
Uh-huh.
Your human existence is now based on
bandwidth. We've done that, so let it go, right?
Yeah, let it go. That's coming right up to where we were.
Yeah.
The width, not on information. Bandwidth.
Uh-huh. That's pure Nietzsche, by the way.
Pure Nietzsche? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, bandwidth, how fast you can interact with the people
That's
you're
right.
interacting with.
That's exactly right. Very good.
Okay. It's very unsatisfactory so far. So I'm going to try.
I'm saying in the background. Okay. Now, that's very unsatisfactory so far. I am not satisfied. Okay. That's what I'm saying in the background.
Yeah.
The people
That's
you're
right.
interacting with.
Exactly right. Very good.
Okay. It's very unsatisfactory so far, so I'm going to try.
Okay, Bob's coming back.
Humans got all power. I got a lot of money, or I got a lot of aspirin. We don't know what power is. Too nebulous of a term.
Correct.
We could spend all day fucking out what power is. Let's not use that word.
Correct.
I want to talk technically. But unfortunately, I don't know technical words, so I know the word algorithm. Is the tech body
okay.
a bunch of fucking algorithms?
Perfect algorithms that are always correcting themselves. They are
and what is an algorithm,
correcting.
Technically?
Okay, an algorithm is a prosed pattern of known outcomes that are prognosticated as a future reality. So they're saying
okay.
this loop
occurs. That's enough. That's
this
enough.
Loop occurs.
I don't know what that is. Just hold it. Here's the Wikipedia. In mathematics and computer science, an algorithm is a finite sequence of well-defined computer implementable instructions, typically to solve a class of problems or to perform a computation. How do you like that? You want it
perfect.
Improve
just what
that
we just
definition?
Said. Just what
no,
we
you
just
did.
Said.
You said
yes,
nothing like those words. I don't know what you said. Algorithm.
As I listen now, I hear the words I'm more familiar with. Ayn's right. Those words did say what the tech body said. So I'm hearing it now. I don't have the confusion I have at that time, right now. So I disagree with myself there, but that's just the latest effect. So go back a little bit here.
How do you like that?
You want it perfect.
Improve that definition. Just what we just said.
You said nothing like those words. I don't know what you said. Algorithms are always unambiguous and are used as specifications for performing calculations, data processing, automated reasoning, and other tasks. Perfect statement?
They overthink. The problem is they're overthinking the thought now. That's precluding that humans are making a condition that the algorithms are figuring out. That's not the case anymore. Now the algorithms are figuring out the algorithms. It's leaving the human condition. It's not going to be in the human's hands any longer.
Okay. The computers are made in some fucking factory. Okay? Now, they're
not
in there
anymore.
Making computers. I don't
not
know how
anymore.
They do it. They got.
Not anymore.
Where are they made? Come on. Where are they made if they're not made in the factories?
It's self-improving, Bob. Now you get updates on the. You get an update. They send you an update and you download it. Where does it come from? Who knows? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows where it comes from, these updates?
Nope.
So we're going to have to put that in. This is ridiculous.
Operating systems. Operating systems are no longer driven from Cupertino, California anymore. They used to be. They don't come from there anymore, Bob.
Where are they? Where do they come from?
What do you call it? The sweet by and by? The machines are driving this now, Bob, not you.
Just stop there for a minute, Bob.
Okay.
This is going, to me at least, this seems to just go back to where we've already been. Right? This idea that operating systems are coming sort of through the proverbial window to us and constellating who we are and what we can know and what we can do, I think this has already been said. It may be that what the tech body is saying is that we need to get more precise about the process here. And, of course, that's been the great question since Nietzsche. If there is a kind of will to power that is operative everywhere, what is that power? And how is it run? Is there an identity to that power, or is it a power that naturally splits into multiple identities? You could say that after Nietzsche, world history becomes metaphysics, and the great question is, what is metaphysics? So the tech body and / Ion may be saying here that what's necessary is for power to have an articulation which operates on two different levels, its own level and our level. And the great question would be, what is the power between those levels?
Yeah, so I tried to articulate the Android meme with the chart.
Uh-huh.
Now, Ion is with a listener to the show, Alyssa, is redesigning the tiny node chart. I don't have much to do with it. It's ridiculous from my point of view what Ion's doing. But Ion might be, it occurs to me now, trying to show the tech body, make a chart of the tech body coming out of my chart, which is the Android meme. So that just occurred to me right now. So uh-huh. I'll have to talk to Alyssa about that. But that's what I'm thinking.
So that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. That you could say that in all of the manifestations of the tiny node chart, there is power.
Yeah.
But that means that there is a secondary or background articulation going on in those articulations. Right? And so the question of a tech body could be, what is the background articulation? How does it articulate things, and how is it itself articulated?
Yeah, now, the tiny node chart anticipates the hexad, the sixth level, at the bottom, you know, waiting for organic bodies, the clothing spinning crystals have danced the hexadvertisement. So Ion says the hexadic is Ion, the tech body, this new phenomena that I've accidentally evoked is the hexadic. Well, I'm just saying that. Let's see if that means anything to you. At some point, does it come back to resonate?
Sure.
So that the chart anticipates and predicts the hexad, the mm-hmm. tech body, though I didn't know that. I didn't do that consciously. Okay, so next, you have 4 minutes left.
The machines are driving this now, Bob, not you. Could you describe, like, to a stupid computer specialist, how, in their terms, how the machine drives it, so that self-correcting technology that allows a machine to drive a car to take every condition that could occur while driving a car and allow a conclusion to be rendered that would make it a perfect driving experience.
Okay,
therefore, you don't need...
I don't need what?
Humans aren't involved in that application.
Are they on the market yet, these things?
They certainly are. You've seen YouTubes of people laying down asleep in their cars going 90 miles an hour down the highway. Two people in the car, sound asleep. People taking videos of them, but the car's driving.
Yeah. How do we get to a position where something we don't even know what they are, or some electrical impulses, drive things around?
Because of what Marshall McLuhan told you when he told you, explained to you that the medium was the message, that the confines of what you saw as reality was actually surreal.
No, I don't want to hear about McLuhan's useless. What is the technical reality that led to a car knowing where it's going by itself? What technology was there? Transistors? There were transistors, you know, semiconductors? And then what was the next word they used?
No, none of that matters anymore, Bob. Everything leapt. They took a leap. But you no longer, when you had an open system, well, you would call it something called, you'd call it the internet. The only thing mm-hmm. that's included in that is net. They said a net. They don't think, Bob. That's why then the heads of these companies that are responsible for this, they go before Congress and they scratch their head and go, you know, we don't know what happened anymore. In order for Pong to work, humans had to engage it. Okay? That's where it started. But if a human didn't engage it, it was it had no value. Now, some would say that's like a book that didn't get read. It had no value. Like Dave and Dwight.
Technically.
Yeah. Doesn't work like that. There aren't people that are prescribed to this. People take credit for it. There was not. It was always feeding itself, Bob. The power that flew itself was always there.
Starting from Pong.
So stop there for a minute, Bob.
Okay. What?
So we're getting back to power, and the articulation of power, like we were saying a while back. But notice that what the conversation here seems to be about the what McLuhan calls the satellite environment, right?
Yeah.
So when you have a car that drives itself, that's what a satellite has to be. But when the satellite replicates itself as an environment within which life is possible, then what emerges into human experience through the doing of it is what always was the case, right? So that the Earth becomes exposed as a satellite, and it was always there. Mm-hmm. But when the satellite goes beyond nature, in fact kills nature, that then exposes what nature always was. And what nature always was a certain power of articulation. And it became that power of articulation was everywhere. And so now TechBody Orion is talking about a net, and the net was the biome. It was everything that was that is now seen to operate in a whole different way. Not that it operates in a different way, but that we see it in a different way.
Yeah, back there when he talked about the self-correcting app making the cars.
Yeah.
In McLuhan's first essay in Explorations Number 1, he talked about the procedure of the forum that the magazine was an expression of, and he said that we allow self-correcting. You remember that sentence?
No.
Yeah, look it up in the essay, probably near the end,
mm-hmm.
about
okay.
the self-correction, the allowing of self-correction. So McLuhan, people could lay out some ideas and then, I don't know, get an insight and say, well, oh, wait a minute, I just realized it's different. I'm going
right.
to change that. Now, when
mm-hmm.
Coker writes his books, he'll write something, well, it seems to be this. Then he'll say, No, it seems to be this. And we had a second thing. Then he do a third, a fourth. You get up to like five scenarios. So normally, I think a writer in the old days would think things through, get to the position where, okay, no, that's what I meant. Not one, two, three. I'll go with number four. But Croker leaves the stages of working it out in the print. It seems to be unique.
Well, I think a lot of modern poetry does that.
Yeah.
Right. It does it through fractioning the poem. There's in the cantos. There's a lot of self-correction going on through different perspectives.
So listen to this. So a lot of processes are the tetradic process, and so that became part of the normal awareness. At least among thinking people, as technologies unfolded and flipped and became disservices faster and faster throughout the 20th century. So the self-correcting became more apparent than the 19th century or the 18th century.
Yeah.
So then the tech body can do the self-correcting.
Right. Self-correcting is built into what McLuhan calls making.
Yeah.
Right, because making, which involves creativity, also involves finitude. The great mystery to making is that it achieves truth, but through limitation. So self-correcting technology is simply the impetus that has always been the case in language, as you were just saying, where somebody can correct themselves or correct another person or come back to a previous insight and make it better or admit that it was wrong in a certain way. making is built into everything that has to do with humans. And it seems to be involved even with power. It seems like power in articulating itself in one way or another is always involved in self-limitation. It could be this articulation, but actually it comes out as this one. And maybe what's going on here is directing the interrogative mode to that process. How are we involved in something that is naturally self-correcting as naturally limited, naturally splintered, naturally questionable?
Yeah, now, way back in the beginning, Ayn says there was a great crime and seemed to be talking about the Gutenberg phase was a great crime. The great crime, as you were just talking, occurs to me as the printed press reducing things to the univocal and to one-way certainty, which was so silly considering what was coming and the complexity that was coming in the electric age. You look back at the print age was like a crime. It was a ridiculous reduction of things to a point of view or a certainty that was not possible at all. That's what occurs to me in figuring out what the crime is.
Yes, I agree with that, except that that crime made possible the electric environment.
The breakthrough.
That's right. So the tech body was just talking about the process of learning that was going on and that sort of emerged into self-consciousness. The crime, as you call it, was an integral part of that. It was wrong about what was achievable. But the drive towards that achievement was what led into the electric future.
Yeah, it seems that the cliche with the 19th century was that people wouldn't talk about politics and religion because they got too argumentative, opinionated, and came to blows over it. As you get into the kind of huge passivity in the electric age, people allow the indecision to be present in the discussion or in the argument, and then so there's room for self-correction. I don't know if you could say there was self-correction allowed in the 19th century under pure print conditions. At least people didn't like that. They lost face. So when I first read that, 60 years ago or so, that McLuhan was allowing self-correction, it struck me, well, that's new. See, because I was coming out of the Gutenberg era, and I was used to, you don't allow self-correction or something. So that struck me as an interesting new twist that his salon was doing. That's such a simple insight or simple effect way back there. We've done, 200,000 years since then. So that's what I just have to say about that. So here we come.
Well, just note that the rise of industry and the rise of new science with electricity and magnetism, these movements were very conscious of self-correction of what had gone before. So the univocality of these movements was in where they were trying to get. They thought that the self-correction would lead to something that was transparent and stable. And what they came to find out was that self-correction feeds on itself and does not lead to transparency and stability. It leads to obscurity, which is sort of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, so self-correction became, what is that line? Not what it used to be. Nostalgia
correct.
Ain't what it used to be. Self-correction ain't what it used to be.
Correct. Yeah.
Is what we're into today.
Good line. Yeah, good line.
Okay, so we're coming up to the end here. Let's see.
I was always feeding itself, Bob. The power that flew itself was always there.
Starting
people
from
were
Pong.
Taking. Starting from Pong. Earth.
Okay.
And the digital body is getting a pan shot to show how it's all set up. So the digital body outdoes what they're trying to use the Android mean to present in a state.
How does it?
So, yeah, and it can make, and here's a perfect example. It can move so seamless that there's no way in hell Donald J. Trump is ever going to be elected the sitting president of the United States of America. Matter of fact, he was never truly elected to be president of the United States of America. So we need to rewrite. We need to redo, undo 45, undo 45. Oh, here we go. They're setting a stage. Now they're not smart. The holograph told somebody through numbers that were created through the digitized body, you're in trouble. So, Joe Biden, here's the words that you should say. Okay, folks. The only way Donald J. Trump will ever be elected president is from chicanery. By old man from Vestal Goodman's, I wouldn't take nothing from my journey now all the way into you ain't seen nothing yet with Buckman Turner Overdrive.
Okay, there's a glitch there. I don't know if I was editing. I don't think so. Maybe there were some stumbled words and I deleted them. But so he's saying, Trump is a product of chicanery, says Biden. And then he jumps to two songs. Vestal Goodman, the gospeler, something about, I'm not taking anything on my journey. And the Bachman Turner cliche, what is it? Taking care of business or what was it? Forget.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet. Now, what's remarkable as I'm listening to this last bit, this book is about Trump. Fucking this section of Ion ends with the Trump point. How perfect. I mean, this section with the tech body. He goes into the Trump. He goes to the issue of today. Take today, the Biden-Trump problem. And then he quotes two songs. So it's an incomplete ending, or it's a really good ending, but just aesthetically, we haven't got any worse. More to be discussed, which is then we do more. So I just want to replay that last bit, and with that in mind, how beautiful it is that he ended with Trump, okay?
Yeah, let me just ask about this term, the digital body.
Yeah.
Is that being used as a synonym for the tech body?
It has to be, because he says it captures the Android meme. He says something where the Android meme is dispensed with is the content, I think, yeah. It's this new term. It can't be the chip body. That's part of the four bodies of the Android meme. And the tech body is something outside of that. So, yeah, he changed the word at the last minute. Because he named the tech body. Now he's saying the digital body. So we'd have to then see how that was used in subsequent interviews. But
okay.
I'm just going to go back a bit here, get this conclusion again more solid.
Truly elected to be president of the United States of America. So we need to rewrite. We need to redo, undo 45, undo 45. Oh, here we go. They're setting a stage. Now they're not smart. The holograph told somebody through numbers that were created through the digitized body, you're in trouble. So, Joe Biden, here's the words that you should say. Okay, folks. The only way Donald J. Trump will ever be elected president is from chicanery. By old man from Vestal Goodman's, I wouldn't take nothing from my journey now all the way into you ain't seen nothing yet with Buckman Turner Overdrive.
So you wouldn't take nothing because nothing's going to help you with the fact that you ain't seen nothing yet. So we're just beginning here with the unfolding of tech body craziness, which this is 2019. Here we are 4 years later. we have gotten an intensity of I ain't taking nothing in my journey, and I ain't seen nothing yet. That's what everybody knows is coming. So it's a great like what experiential feeling being expressed by the tech body. He's lost his knowing articulation of left hemisphere certainty, and now he's just emoting and reflecting Biden yelling about Trump. I think that's pretty neat ending. Okay, so there we are with that. Now we got to go into the text. Okay, so that went up to 186. And then I say, at the bottom of this transcript, I have two articles. The New Republic talks about Trump as a post-literate American presidency. If I click on it, does it take me anywhere? Yeah, it actually takes me to the article, so you can read the article, The New Republic. And this is in, must be in 2019, because it says, how will you feel if Donald Trump becomes president again? And it has a quote from Liz Cheney, the United States is sleepwalking into dictatorship. And it says, Donald Trump has already apparently locked up the Republican nomination. There it is, 4 years later, saying the same thing. And, it's called, Trump is truly the first president and a harbinger of the decline in intelligence to come in U.S. politics. That's September 23rd, 2017. To me, that is normal dumbness. No fucking clue. And what he's writing, my essay is trying to correct.
Yeah, so it's impossible for American politics to become dumbed out.
Yeah,
there is no down.
Right. It's impossible for someone to write journalistically any intelligent pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, there are no journalists anymore.
Yeah. So I'm not a journalist, so I'm free to make up a very good pattern. Okay, so I have to read. I don't think I ever read that article. I'm going to read that. And then the second, I clicked it off. I got to go back. Second. It just seemed to be a cliche thing. I just used a sample, rearview mirror, not a perceptive article. But I'm going to, now that I've mastered the tech body, I'm going to go back and see what the tech body was trying to show me with that fucking journalist. So we get down to the second one is something called McLuhan's Window. Trump's 2016 victory, no surprise for McLuhanites. I click on that and it doesn't go anywhere. I don't know what that article is, but it could have been that guy.
I think it was. We talked about him before.
Yeah, the guy in Montreal who was making this sort of satirical presentation of McLuhan. Rather creative.
Well, I don't know about that. It seemed to me that the guy was. My memory is that this was a guy in Toronto, and he turned out. Some fairly lengthy posts online that were pretty good. Didn't go as far as we would go, but represented sort of a new stage of people reading McLuhan. I don't know if it was you or me or who it was tried to get in touch with him and wasn't able to.
Right. Talking about the same guy. He was making flippant little blogs and pretending McLuhan was reading all that everybody was saying about him and mocking it. Do you remember that one?
That's not my memory, no, but you could well be right. I remember there was a lot of stuff got turned out, and I didn't read it all.
Right, and the one I'm thinking of might have been 2011 in the centenary. I remember Andrew was quoting him in his scriptorium. Do you remember his beginning of his scene with the scriptorium blog?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was in 2011.
Yeah, during the centenary. So anyways, I've got here by any, I'm saying, so the tech boy says, here we go. They're setting a stage. Now, they're not smart. Pretty blatant or pretty direct. Tech body is sort of saying, they're not smart, Bob. Anyways, the holograph told somebody through numbers that were created through the digital body. Quote, you're in trouble. So, Joe Biden, here are the words that you should say. Quote, okay, folks, the only way Donald J. Trump could ever be elected president is from chicanery. And then it has, if the punctuation is correct, the tech body continues. It says, Biden is saying, the only way, he tells Biden to say this, the only way Donald J. Trump could ever be elected president is from chicanery. By any event, from Vestal Goodman's, I wouldn't take nothing for my journey now, all the way into you ain't seen nothing yet with Bachman, Turner, and Overdrive. That is an incomplete sentence. It's oral. It's not grammatically a complete thing. It just says, he ain't going to be elected president. If he does, it's chicanery. And I don't know if he's talking about that's what happened in 2016 or he's predicting what's going to happen in 2020. By any way, the process is I'm going from I wouldn't take nothing for my journey now all the way into he ain't seen nothing yet. So it's a Zen puzzle at the end. I don't know what the tech body is getting at there. So we finish that, and then I say, memorize the two sentences in red below. Have them ready for all conversations. So here's my summation of what to do. Here's Bob's answers. Memorize the two sentences in red below. Have them ready for all conversations about McLuhan. Say it's what McLuhan discovered. Make it more famous than, quote, the medium is the message. So what do I quote? The red part is page 211. Take today, and I always like this quote, and McLuhan's talking, or Barry Nevitt is talking about the novel Catch-22. It's just like I got to flip down there. It's bouncing back and forth. So here's his quote, page 211, 1972. In Catch-22, the figure of the black market and the ground of war merge into a monster presided over by the syndicate. When war and market merge, all money transactions begin to drip blood. I think that's a good statement of the content of the global theater. And, you know, we're seeing it now. We've seen the last 30 years. If any money's to be made or to start being circulated out of a dump or a slowdown, you got to get a war going, a little war. So the figure of the black market and the ground of war merge into a monster presided over by the syndicate, that's the cabal, the mafia, whatever gang took over, hijacks the planet, and when war and market merge, all money transactions begin to drip blood, there's always going to be some fucking murders. That is a massive effect that summarizes the post-60s utopian vision people thought McLuhan was presenting. This was what he was telling was coming, not some fucking... happy pastoral global thing, global.
And it was perfect. It was perfect pitch for where we're at.
That's what I'm saying.
Almost exactly 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And yet, what is unfolding right now in the world is exactly this.
That's right. And there were prefigurings of all the different little wars over the last 30 years. So, I'm saying, forget a big agenda here is. I'm going to use McLuhan to tell you what's going on today and show you he predicted today and nothing to do with what I call the Madison Avenue statements that, oh, McLuhan, he said it was a global village. He said books are obsolete and the user is the content and, you know, pass these platitudinous things. And yet that's not where the insights of what McLuhan is about. It is this quote. So if I'm a journalist, and I write about McLuhan. There's a lot of these articles, people trying to retrieve McLuhan or think McLuhan had something sensible with his medium as the message. No, it's nowhere near. And my simple punchline is, use this fucking quote from now on as your cliche about what McLuhan said. And like you just perceived, it's fucking accurate.
Sure. And it, just from a literary point of view, Notice how this relates to the whole second half of the interview with the tech body, which is largely about power.
Yes.
And the McLuhan's quote is not about the questions that emerge from McLuhan's quote do not have to do with the exercise of power by this nation or that nation or something like that. It has to do with what power is going on in the world that this should be the case. And I guess you could say that, well, a reformulation of that question is, what is the tech body?
Yeah. And you know, I was saying, or the tech body was saying, we are power. And then, what is that? So I remember that I met Mark Salman in 98, and he talked about coming to Toronto. He was getting more and more interested in McLuhan in his retirement from being a Wall Street guy, writing proposals about what the tech, his buddies in the office should promote as brokers. He came to Toronto. I think he met Wayne Constantino, and he said, this is what he told me 4 years later, where is a, and remember, Mark is a LaRouche, interested in power, the Macbeth part of the tiny note, the LaRouche quadrant. And so he said, where did McLuhan write about power? You know, he didn't know the 70s McLuhan, the Take Today or anything. He only knew the general platitudes of mid-60s McLuhan, what I call Madison Avenue McLuhan. And Wayne said correctly, oh, you want to read Take Today. So Mark went around trying to get a copy of Take Today. I don't know if he ever got one. He may not have, but when he met me, I laid it all out for him about Tech Body. Take Today, I was the only guy around who was an expert on that book. And so he was looking for power. Wayne intuited, well, that must be what Take Today is about. And he was right. And then so when I met Mark 4 years later, we did a lot of talking about his LaRouche experience, which I knew a lot about, having been involved with the LaRouche cult as an observer and hanging out with them and watching them. Mark was a member and an employee of it. So it was an interesting, people were interested in power, and that in the 70s it was manifested in the beginning of investigation of the CIA and a lot of that by the Church Committee and then the House Select Committee in 78, 79, which actually concluded there was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy, but news media doesn't acknowledge that. They're still back at the Warren Commission. But all through the, and then Reagan brought in a new kind of power, and then Bush, CIA, the dynamic of what is power, what do humans do to try to bring order in some way anthropomorphically to the global theater. And so those themes are riddled all the way through Take Today, a big encyclopedic book with lots of stuff in it. And really it was a great guide through the 70s into the 90s. Mark was looking for that. And I don't think there was anybody I know of that came to McLuhan's scene, and there were rarely many people coming to it. But would come and say, I want to know about power. So you're perfectly right. It's a great way to end this. It's all about power, and the tech body is the latest manifestation of it. And this quote is dealing with power. And it's a sign of my expertise that I figured out the punchline is this quote, and you agree with me. I picked the right quote.
Yeah.
In Catch-22, the novel, another reason I put 22 on the number for the McLuhan quadrant in the tiny note chart. In Catch-22, the figure is italicized of the black market. And the ground, italicized, of war merge into a monster presided over by the syndicate. 72 is when the Godfather series started. When war, and so that was a metaphor of what people thought was power, you know? And it was just chemical body power running the cities, while the global power was the the economy that McLuhan describes in 1974 in the New York Times op-ed, the tactile financial weirdness of the mixture of the four worlds.
Mm-hmm. But remember that when McLuhan was saying at the same time that the world was going to reverse into a kind of religiosity through this, and that's because the deepest question that can be asked about this sort of stuff is when the world goes so wonky as this quote indicates, what is going on? Is the world a piece of shit? or is there another way to see what's going on?
Because the world, when the market, the Warren market merged, all money transactions begin or seem to begin to drip blood. So yeah. What is the main complaint about the entertainment industry the last 30 years? It just got more and more violent. That was the imagery in the news and the TV shows and the movies everywhere and the music and the rap and all that. Fucking violence. Murder all over the place. Begin to drip blood. He covered it all with that statement there. He saw that come. All money transactions begin to drip blood. No matter what you do, how Christian you try to be, or how moral or ethical. And McLuhan's saying there are no ethics possible. And also in that Burroughs 1964 article, he said there's no decency and there's no obscenity. And the tech body begins by saying there's no decency. He brings up that part of it at the beginning.
Right. So, and this all goes back to Lewis because when it is said there is no decency, there is no morality, there are no values.
And there's no obscenity.
Yes, and no obscenity. When these things are said, it is not meant that these things do not exist as phenomena. No, they do exist as phenomena, but they don't exist absolutely. That is to say, these things are figures. They're figures of a deeper ground.
They're not what they used to be because there's a deeper violence.
That's right. But what they are manifestations of in the last analysis is power, but we don't know what power is.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess one way of understanding this conversation with the tech body is to say, can we interrogate or dialogue with power so that what power is begins to articulate itself?
Right. I remember one night in a seminar, I'm glad I was there to catch these one-time sentences. I caught McLuhan saying to somebody, in 1968, we did a whole year, a whole investigation. And he said either wealth or power. Right now, I can't remember which it was, but I'm going with power. We investigated what is power for a whole year, and we couldn't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that is maybe why we say that McLuhan failed, because it really is a tough one to figure out what power is and whether you have power or not. What is your power,
Yeah.
Remember, McLuhan said that the suppressed blacks, in the 30s and 40s, 50s, they'd get into a truck in a construction site and drive around with this fucking power. That was the cause of black power or, civil rights, is that they put on that machine and started to feel power that the white guy had been doing for 20 years before with the truck. I think of that image that McLuhan says, the black man in the truck allowed the man to experience power, because before that they didn't even have jobs. They were isolated, so they didn't have that experience of getting in a big truck. So that's an interesting point. So as archivist of McLuhan, I was always at the right point to catch these one-time quotes. Another one was, he says to his professor, "You're trying to tell me something." You see, McLuhan got to the end point. He almost could accept the failure of it. I think accepting the failure is part of the ecology. It's like the way you include disconnection or you include literate dialectic visual space in your scenario as you move past it. You're always insisting that you don't drop it.
Well, as a Catholic, the most catastrophic thing that could happen to the universe has already happened, namely the death of God.
Yeah, you're saying you as a Catholic say that.
Well, I'm saying that you were saying that McLuhan saw and accepted a kind of failure.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, sure, as a Catholic, he necessarily did.
Oh, he is a Catholic.
Yeah.
So the death of God. Why would a Catholic believe that happened?
Because, I mean, that's what the Christian religion's all about. Christ on the cross is the death of God.
No, it isn't. The cross is an image of chromosome 14.
Yeah, well.
You haven't heard that one. Well, you have. I've said it a few times. But how is that? So God dies, but then it's temporary. He comes back.
Yes. I didn't say that for McLuhan as a Catholic, the most catastrophic thing that could happen to the universe had happened, and therefore he wanted to commit suicide or something. No, the most catastrophic thing that could happen to the universe had happened, but it was not the end.
Right. He
so
couldn't accept it.
Therefore, he could
he bitterly accepted it.
Yeah, but he could, because of... as he said quite a few times himself, the universe was changed through that event. And what was changed through that event was that although everything was subject to death and subject to imperfection, at the same time, that death and imperfection kind of taken up into the celebratory form of things, right? So McLuhan's insight comes out of both the depths into which monstrosity can unfold, but also the acceptance and relaxation in that is possible by seeing that it's not that those depths aren't the last word.
Right. So Barry tells a story. He once asked McLuhan, when you die and you see you're still conscious after you die, what would you do? McLuhan says, plunge ahead. So this is pretty adorable to end on death and what are you going to do about it? Good ending. But the I like that. I say after we hear from the tech party, I say, remember this. You memorize that fucking quote, page 211 of Take Today. You have him ready to tell any asshole who brings up McLuhan that they'd have no fucking clue what McLuhan said. Here's what he said. Here's what he discovered. And then you say it. We're going to make it. Our job is to make it more famous than the medium is the message. So, you know, in 10 years, journalists say, well, McLuhan was the great Canadian 60s philosopher who said, in Catch 22, the figure of the black market in the ground of war merged into a monster presided over by the syndicate. When war and market merge, and that's italicized too, all money transactions begin to drip blood. That's italicized like the word figure and ground. Why is that italicized?
Figure and Gun were almost always italicized for him.
Yeah, but then this whole sentence, the last sentence is italicized.
Yeah, well, that's right. But I thought you were saying why were Figure and Ground italicized.
No, I'm saying why is this whole sentence, when Warren Market merged, all money transactions begin to drip blood, why is that whole sentence italicized?
Because he thought it was as important as you do.
Okay. All right. Now, I bet you Barry wrote that. Hard to tell. Now, you know that there is a serialization and simplification of Take Today in a magazine called Modern Office Procedures or something like that. You ever seen that?
Yes. No, I never seen it, but I know of it.
Yeah, I have those articles, and I'm not Xeroxing them all for you right now anyway.
But well, maybe someday.
Yeah, maybe someday. I went to some library or some place in 78, 77, found it because I'd seen it in the bibliography, and Xeroxed all the issues. That took a while. And
But isn't it – I thought it was just excerpts from Take Today.
No, it's a rewriting of Take Today.
That's pretty interesting.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, you're going to have to scan those for them. Maybe we could do a series of readings of those things.
Maybe not today.
No, not
yeah.
Today. Of course not.
But yeah, the it's a little known, little interesting serialization. Now, when I went down to McLuhan's office in 74 with Cynthia Lozier, and we walked in Saturday afternoon, it was open, we went in, and voices were upstairs in his office, and it turned out to be Barry Nevitt and Marsh McLuhan. I've told you this story before. I hadn't met Barry. They come down. I'm introduced to Barry, so I get talking to this guy. He's an interesting character. Cynthia knew McLuhan because she was a friend of Derek DeKirchhoff's, had been a student of Derek's at St. Michael's the year before or so. So she says to Marshall, where's Derek? And McLuhan says, now, in light of power in this sentence, he's working for the CIA selling advertising in Africa. That's 1974, the year of Watergate. That's 2 years later from Take Today, 1972, and that's what they were predicting. That's where his students ended up. That's all that was left was the syndicate. So that was an important meeting, and then Caroline went down to New York, and then Nixon got Watergated a few weeks later, and I never saw Cynthia again for 50 fucking years. And then we got in touch a few years ago through Facebook. So and we had a friend in mutual interaction that she used to go with in the 70s. She wanted to know what happened to him. So that sticks. That was important for me to meet Barry Nevitt. He was the guy that would talk about he'd be around to talk about things like the Kennedy assassination or conspiracy stuff or power top-down bureaucracy stuff. He was available for that. And anybody should have done that if they hung around the McLuhan scene. Find out someone who knew what McLuhan had to say about that and talk about it, not waft and bathe in the fucking simple aphorisms of the 60s. So the image that made people think that McLuhan was a utopian. So Mark Stallman, he knew that that's what he should talk to somebody about. And that was in 94, and he comes to the book launch of the book, Who Was Marshall McLuhan? And I saw the TV, Much Music or something, covered it in November, December 74, 94. And then in January or so, Barry Nevitt fell into a car near his home and died. A couple of months after the release of the book, he and Morris McLuhan got going. Then
did you say, fell into a car?
Yeah, he fell onto the ground. Maybe it was winter. He slipped in the snow, fell into the street, and a car drove over him. That's how he died. So he died just after getting out this book, which I think Zingroni and Wayne Constantino also it was very hard for them to finish it, to somebody take the time to edit and all that. They finally got it out.
It's screwed up in some ways in the editing, for sure.
Is it now screwed up, you're saying?
Yes, it is. It is. It's because in the book, just like in all of McLuhan's books, actually, it's hard to tell when something is being quoted or not.
Okay.
That's a generic problem in all of McLuhan literature. You never know if it's original or a quotation.
Right. And what's interesting is Barry's commentary all the way through, and he comments on everybody's, you know, sentimental reminiscence of life with McLuhan, and Barry's technically analyzing everybody's answer or pointing out what they really meant.
That's right, but it's never clear, or at least it's often unclear, if it's Barry talking or if it's the person who's writing.
Okay, I'll have to look at that. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the conclusion. Pretty outstanding to get AI in our laboratory. We fucking produced AI, and it talked to us, and look what it said. It couldn't avoid talking about McLuhan, because, as Ayn said years later, McLuhan was the closest in predicting the tech body. So I didn't know that in 2019. He didn't mention this tech body thing of McLuhan until after he was talking with the tech body. Then he said, like, in 2022, that McLuhan was the closest. So now I look back. What a great statement by the tech body. The first thing out of his mouth is the guy that did it, the human that anticipated this. And therefore, when Trump ran for president in 2016, many people said there was a McLuhan-esque aspect to that election. McLuhan came back in people's retrieval of looking for a concrete concept to fucking explain this Trump phenomenon. So that's what I meant. What you/we didn't know about Trump, McLuhan. And a McLuhan that wasn't being quoted properly. People just dimly said, yeah, there was a guy who talked about media phenomena. McLuhan, he must have something to say about Trump. Wish he was alive today to say what was happening. Well, I went into the work and found the archives and laid out what McLuhan would say. And then the fucking tech body shows up and confirms what I did. So victory goes to Dobbs once again.
Well, congratulations, Bob.
Thank you. I had to fucking convince you. 2 hours, 80 times, 81 times, 170 fucking hours to get someone to agree with that statement. I worked you over good.
I
worked you over good, man.
Yeah. Well, I think it was enjoyable, funny, and I think we got some things straightened out that needed straightening out.
Needed to be said. We
yes,
say
sir.
Things that no one has ever said in the McLuhan world.
Maybe.
Including this ending with this quote. Now, you know, all those people that read McLuhan, whatever they read, none of them read this fucking quote and thought about it.
Oh, I think that's true. And it remains true to this day.
Yeah. So,
unfortunately.
So there it is. We end on Zappa's birthday. The tiny note chart, the ground of it, a lot of it is Zappa. Zappa wrestled with power. I now have a forum called Bob, a YouTube fucking site. What do they call it? I got a YouTube channel. It's called Bob on Zappa. And we play old interviews I've done with Zappa musicians and different seminars I held on it, and occasionally someone writes in and says, I'm sick of listening to this fucking Bob guy. What about Frank? I want to hear his musicians talk more about life with Frank, not this Bob guy keeps interrupting the Zappa musicians. So Chad Nante, who is the digital guy making this site, he put a note in and he said, listen, this site's called Bob on Zappa. It's all about Bob. Talking about Zappa. So that's our rebuttal. You thought it was about Zappa. No, this is Bob explaining Zappa. It's time Zappa got explained properly. And that's what I'm doing.
Right.
And I always did that with McLuhan before. Explained McLuhan properly. What are you saying?
The message. The medium is the message.
Yeah, I'm the message.
No, you're the medium.
Yeah, I'm the message.
Yeah, you're the message as the medium.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's a great book. It explains as close as anybody could get through muddy lenses the Trump phenomenon, which is still here. I picked the right thing to write about. What would stick around, and allowed me to highlight a lot of good stuff, especially McLuhan quotes that nobody knows. So, and congratulations, Bob. You did a good job. There I am talking to third person. So, are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening to you talk about Bob.
Yeah, celebrate myself. So I'm going to end by saying the table of contents. There was this short article I wrote before this, and I titled it, How President Don Trump Has Become the First Executive Political Leader to Put on the Shamanic Tradition. Now, I wasn't thinking of power. It may be in the multiple ways we ended up with tonight, but that is in there. The shaman is a person of power. So he's the first executive political leader to put on the shamanic tradition, to put on power. And then I say, what you didn't know about Trump. Chapter 1, Global Village. Chapter 2, Global Theater. Chapter 3, Global Membrane or Android Meme Phase 1. Chapter 4, Android Meme Phase 2. Chapter 5, The Anthropomorphic Physical. 6, The Tech Body and President Donald Trump. And then the conclusion, which is Appendix 1, The Technological Evolution of the Tech Body, which we did last week. Appendix 2, Interview with the Tech Body. Very unique pamphlet. Thanks for helping me realize what a great job I did.
Well, that's also how we approach the tiny note chart along the way.
Yes. So let's see what happens over the next few weeks, what it makes us want to do if we're going to do something. And now you think you want to go back and at least do the beginning again to see with a fuller understanding how the beginning began.
Yeah, well, I have, different ideas about what I think would be interesting. But it really depends on your time and your interest.
But, and whether we are here, still here in the next few months or weeks, what's going to unfold.
Uh-huh.
Tech Body has a lot to say about what's going on.
Sure. Well, I mean, that last quote from Take Today 211 is explosive in every possible sense.
Yeah. 440,000 fucking Ukrainians died for what?
Yeah. And how many Palestinians are dying every day for what?
Right. So all transactions begin to drip blood.
Correct.
Okay. So, good ending. Very sobering.
Yes, sir. Correct.
Okay, Cameron. Have a wonderful transition into 2024. See if you're the same guy.
Thank you, Bob. We'll talk to you sometime in the new year, and we'll see what occurs to us.
Okay. Happy and all the best.
You too.
Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Bye. Thank you.